Hello, I'm Father Mitch Pacwa, and welcome to EWTN Live, where we bring you guests from around the world. Tonight, we'll learn about the proper role and ministry of the diaconate, in particular, inside the Byzantine Catholic Church. Our guest is a Ukrainian Greek Catholic deacon in northern Cambria, Pennsylvania. He's also a professor of religious studies at Mount Aloysius College, just outside of Pittsburgh. So please welcome our guest, Father Deacon Anthony Dragani. Father Deacon, welcome.
Thank you, Father.
Great to have you here with us.
It's a joy to be here.
Thank you. And first of all, how long have you been a deacon?
It'll be 6 years in October.
6 years, yeah. So it's not that long.
No, I'm still making mistakes, still learning, still growing.
And as the deacon in our cathedral once said, that he thought of his main role as taking the blame so the priest doesn't get blamed. But I think you have a wider view of things than
that. Yeah, a bit wider than that.
Yeah, that's good. First of all, why were you attracted to the diaconate? What drew you to that?
Well, when I was a boy, I felt drawn to serve at the altar in some way, first as an altar server, but as a kid, I'd play priest in my bedroom, right? I felt drawn towards some sort of service. I didn't know what a deacon was then, though. I never heard of deacons as a kid other than seminarians who are about to be ordained as priests. The idea of a person being a deacon, you know, for life or for an extended period of time was unheard of to me. But when I was a teenager, I met a deacon in my town, and he was actually the first deacon in the area. He was actually ordained, I believe, in Texas for Roman Catholic Diocese, but he was transferred to Pennsylvania because of his work. So when he arrived in the area, people were talking, hey, there's a married deacon in the area. And people were calling him a lay deacon, which is incorrect.
Why is that incorrect?
Well, they heard he was married, so they figured he must have been a layman, but deacons are actually clergy.
Exactly.
Yeah, but I met him, and he was a really wonderful man who had a terrific ministry, and that got me thinking that I could see myself as a deacon someday. So I was very interested in it, but the time was never right. So it was in the back of my mind for many years, but I probably never was going to act on it. This is where my wife comes into the picture. God bless her. She knew I was thinking about it, but she knew I was never going to act on it. And one night, we were laying in bed about to go to sleep, and my wife looked over at me and said, I think you should become a deacon. And I said, you mean when the kids are grown up or older, right? She said, no, right now. How about you make some phone calls and find out what's involved and how you would apply? So I'm like, okay. So the next day I called a friend of mine who'd been a deacon for many years. And actually, you've met him before, Father Daniel Dozier. He was a deacon at that point.
Okay.
And I told him that I was interested in learning about this, and he said, well, as it happens, I'm on my way right now to meet with the director of deacon formation for your eparchy, diocese.
Yeah.
Oh, he said, let me talk to him for you.
Yeah, and that's just so folks understand, in the Eastern Church, they don't use the Latin word diocese. That was a division within the Roman Empire.
Right.
The political division that, like a state or county. And in the East, they use the word eparchy.
Yes.
It's headed by the eparch or the bishop.
Yeah.
Just like a diocese in the Roman Church. Just different. Greek is eparchy and diocese is Latin.
Exactly. And so Father Daniel, at that time, Father Deacon Daniel, was about to meet with the director of deacon formation for my eparchy. And a few days later, he called me back and said, they're starting a new class of deacon candidates. They want you to apply. So everything just fell into place. But I have to give a lot of credit to my wife, Vanessa. God bless her, because if she hadn't given me the push, I would still be toying with the idea in the back of my mind. I probably was not going to act on it until she gave me the push that I needed.
Nice. Yeah. And this is something that in the Roman Church, the deacon candidates study with their wives. Was that the case for you?
No, we don't typically approach it that way. Now, the wife has to be on board 100%. That is vital. So my wife, Vanessa, had to write, you know, a letter explaining why she supported me becoming a deacon, and, you know, plus she had to get to know the bishop as well. our bishop is awesome, Bishop O'Don Danilo, and he likes to know the husband and wife. He wants to get to know who we are before anyone is ordained. So she spent a lot of time with him. And of course, my wife is very involved in my home parish, which is in Protection of the Holy Mother of God in Revelock, Pennsylvania. And we have another parish I serve at as well in Northern Cambria, St. Mary's. My wife is very involved in the parish. She's always there, you know, making pierogies in the summertime and very much a church lady, right? Mm-hmm. And she had to be very supportive of this, but the idea of her studying with me, it probably wouldn't have worked too well because we have little kids, right? At the time, we had a little baby at home, so somebody
How old is your youngest now?
She's going to be 8 in about a week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And your oldest?
My oldest is going to be 14 in August.
So, and that's another issue, is that mm-hmm. you're also raising children.
Yes.
You know, you're growing together with your wife in marriage, but that's obviously included in a number of children at a fairly young age span.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a consideration.
Yeah.
And that's why initially I said to my wife, even when the kids are older, but she thought it was the time, and she was right, it was mm-hmm. the right time.
Mm-hmm.
And as it happened, there was another man from my parish who went into the same deacon formation class with me, mm-hmm. Father Deacon Chris Bellick, and he's been like a partner to me, in my diaconate. The two of us were ordained together at the same time, and mm-hmm. we kind of worked together and helped each other out, so that's a real blessing also.
Yeah, yeah. Now, given that background, you know, what do you see as the ministry of deacons,
mm-hmm.
What is it that the deacons do in the church, and what's their proper role in the church?
So in the church universal, not just Byzantine, but the church universal, the deacon is really meant to be a servant. But sometimes that word is kind of limited in its understanding, and I'll explain what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So in the Bible, it talks about diaconia. Excuse me if my pronunciation is imperfect, mm-hmm. but I think it's diaconia. And it talks about diakonos, deacons. And that word is translated oftentimes as servant, but often with the implication of service to those in need,
mm-hmm.
which is one aspect of it.
Yes.
But if you look at the word as it was actually used in the time of the early church, it meant more than that. It really meant service on behalf of a greater authority. So you find ancient Greek literature talking about service to the gods as diakonos, or service to the state as diakonos.
So this would be in secular Greek,
not
Christian church. But you know, and it's important that this is a word that pre-existed the church.
Pre-existed. So the word means service on behalf of a higher authority.
Mm-hmm.
One way of translating it would perhaps be emissary or ambassador or envoy. What happened was, in the 1800s in Germany, there was a biblical lexicon that was put out that translated the word diakonos as service to those in need, which was only one aspect of it. But mm-hmm. that lexicon was very influential, and it impacted theology textbooks, theology books mm-hmm. for a century later. Now today, if you pick up a modern lexicon, it'll translate it more as envoy or ambassador. But for a long time, people associated the word diakonia with only service to those in need, which is only a part of what the word means.
In a lot of times, I still have heard deacons referred to in terms of table service,
mm-hmm.
because that was their need that the deacons met in Acts of the Apostles.
Right, right.
You know, when the diaconate was found in chapter 6, and so Stephen and the others were there to make sure that the Greek-speaking Christians were treated fairly and not overlooked.
So what that passage is actually talking about, it's actually more debatable than people realize,
mm-hmm.
because it says just a few verses before that, in the same chapter, I believe, that in the early church, things were shared, and it says no one was in need of anything.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't make sense that you have a few verses later, it says that the Greek widows were being neglected.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that mean, service at table? Well, one possible interpretation would be catechetical teaching. sitting at the table, teaching them, training them, you know, being there for them, more than just showing up with food to eat, because they probably were not actually in need. That being said, even if that is the meaning, if it does mean table service, that's only one aspect of the service involved, because right after that happens, after those first deacons are ordained, we see that Stephen is out preaching. And he preaches so effectively that he's actually stoned to death. And then we see Philip baptizing and going to villages, evangelizing. So the service they did was pretty broad, pretty broad.
Philip, the deacon, is not the same as Philip the apostle.
No.
That's the brother of, he's from Bethsaida.
Mm-hmm.
And, so he was an apostle and one of the bishops. But Philip the deacon is a very prominent preacher in Samaria and to the Ethiopian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So while service to those in need is definitely one aspect of diaconia, it's not the entirety of it.
Mm-hmm.
So what it comes down to is, in practice, and historically this is the way it was, a deacon is there to do whatever the bishop needs. Whatever special job the bishop has, the deacon is there to do it for him, on behalf of him, and acting under the authority of the bishop.
There's a quote from St. Ignatius of Antioch that I'd like to read here. St. Ignatius was, of course, about to be martyred in 107, and on his way there, he wrote seven letters. And in his letter to the Trollians, Trollia was a city in Asia Minor, he says this: "In like manner, let all reverence the deacons as an appointment of Jesus Christ, and the bishop as Jesus Christ, who is the Son of the Father, and the presbyters as the Sanhedrin of God, and the assembly of the apostles. Apart from these, there is no church."
Yeah.
This is a very important understanding. I mean, think 107. Ignatius had been the bishop of Antioch, which was, the city where people are first called Christians.
Yes.
It was the third largest city in the Roman Empire. So obviously very important city, and that's why he was arrested, even though he was in his 80s. You know, think, well, what's a man in his 80s? Why is the Roman Empire so worried about a man in his 80s that they bring him from Antioch all the way to Rome in order to die in the arena? But they did.
Yeah.
So he, goes to his death, writes about the necessity of the bishop, the presbyters, the priests, and the deacons.
Yes, yes. Without deacons, without priests, without bishops, there is no church. So that says that deacons are actually necessary for the constitution of the church, which is an interesting thought, because I often encounter people who think the deacons are not necessary, sadly.
No. I know, and it's something, especially in the Western church, we didn't have deacons continuing as deacons, what we now call permanent deacons.
Mm-hmm.
We always had deacons, but, as in my case, for a week, it was tradition to ordain, the minor orders, the subdeacon, deacon, and a week later, priest.
Mm-hmm.
So they were there, but, they became priests. Not so in the Eastern Church, is it?
In the Eastern tradition, deacons stayed a permanent office, a full office.
Mm-hmm.
And you had men who were deacons for life, or maybe men who were deacons for 10, 20 years, and then were called to the priesthood. But they were never just seen as a transitional step.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, if you look at the liturgies of most of the Eastern churches, what you'll see is that the deacons part is pretty prominent, especially in the Byzantine Rite, it's very prominent. And you may have situations where there's a parish without a deacon, and the priest will do the deacon's parts. But when that happens, it feels like something is missing.
Yes.
Because the deacon's part is very prominent.
Yes.
And it was always envisioned that these liturgies were to be celebrated with the deacon. That's the best way, the correct way to celebrate them. If you have a deacon, you use the deacon. But in In reality, that's not always possible.
And I strongly sense that in the Maronite Church as well. Mm-hmm. In the Maronite Church, the deacons also have a very prominent role yeah. in the liturgy. And this is something very important. There have been times when we didn't have a deacon at a particular parish, and so I would do it, or the other priest, we'd go back and forth helping. But you know, now that we have deacons and subdeacons as well, mm-hmm. This is something that's very important for the sake of the parish.
It is. It has a whole new dynamic to the liturgy. Mm-hmm. And you know, in the Byzantine tradition, for example, the priest, ideally, he's at the altar, praying at the altar, he's interceding for the people. Mm-hmm. And the deacon kind of comes and goes from behind the icon screen, and he's more of an intermediary between heaven and earth, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And there's a dynamic there that's lost when you don't have a deacon.
Yeah, I think that that's right. And certainly in the Maronite rite, the deacons and subdeacons would be the ones who read the petitions.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, that is a role for the deacons to have. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very important part of the liturgy, and a variety of other things. They, when they have the procession with the bread and the wine for the offertory, mm-hmm. the deacon and subdeacon bring that, you know, that mm-hmm. they have a specific role.
Yeah.
And that's an important part.
It really adds to the symbolism.
This is also something that I think is worth noting. Going back to St. Ignatius mm-hmm. of Antioch, that, you know, the deacon doesn't serve in a parish at the behest of a priest.
Right.
But he is sent there by the bishop. He's very much also, like the priest, he's an agent of the bishop. He's there to serve at the yes. bishop's good pleasure.
Absolutely. He's there on behalf of the bishop just as the priest is. Thankfully, I have an awesome pastor, Father Andre Kilt, who loves having deacons. He's very supportive of us. Sadly, I've known some fellow deacons in other traditions or other churches where their priest didn't necessarily want a deacon, mm-hmm. which is unfortunate. But when you have a priest who is appreciative of the diaconate, it really helps our ministry, and I think it really benefits the entire parish.
Mm-hmm. And you know, something else that is an important part in the Roman Catholic Church is that the deacon is one of the ordinary ministers of Holy Communion. Mm-hmm. Is this also true in the East?
Well, if you have a small congregation, the priest would be the typical minister. But when there's a situation where there are many people, the deacon is also an ordinary minister as well.
Yes. Yeah. And this is something where, you know, we in the Roman Church, we have extraordinary ministers. When there aren't mm-hmm. enough priests and deacons, then lay people can be called, especially since some of the parishes are very, very large.
Huge, yeah.
You know, and they'll do that. But that doesn't exist in the Eastern Church, does
it? Not typically. There are rare circumstances where, say, you have a very large parish with only a priest, and the priest may be older and have difficulty. Like, I know of a situation where the priest had really bad carpal tunnel. So there's permission given for a lay person to assist, but that's very, very, very rare.
Yes.
Typically, you know, the priest and the deacon are the ones who give communion.
Yes. Yeah. And these are important roles in preaching. Is that also part of the ministry of the diaconate?
A big part
of
it.
In the Eastern Church?
Yes, indeed. In my parish, we have a schedule. It's between the priest and the two deacons. We mm-hmm. all take turns preaching, and
yes.
it's a very important part of our ministry.
Yes.
Just like, you know, with Philip the deacon and St. Stephen, they were both preachers.
Exactly. Exactly. So this is something that is part, and sometimes in the Roman Church, you might have people who say, well, I don't want to go to the lay deacon, which is an impossibility. He's either a deacon or he's a layman.
Right.
There's no such thing as a lay deacon. You are mm-hmm. a permanent deacon or you are a layman. you know. But they'll sometimes say, no, I want to go to the priest rather than the deacon. But the deacon is an ordinary minister. He's not a layman. He is clergy, and it's a major order.
Yeah, absolutely.
The bishop, priest, and deacon are the three major orders.
I've experienced situations where I'd be assisting at a Roman Mass, because there are a lot of Roman Catholic parishes in my area, and they're very friendly with us. Mm-hmm. But I've had a few experiences, at least one that I can think of, where I was there as a deacon, and it was time for communion, and they told me to sit down so an extraordinary minister could distribute. And in that situation, there was a lack of understanding. That happens a lot, I think, with some deacons. Mm-hmm. But in situations like that, education usually makes a huge difference.
Yes. And canonically, that's just not correct. Mm-hmm. You know, unless the priest or the deacon are enfeebled in
right.
some way through illness or injury, something like that. But other than enfeeblement, they're required to distribute communion.
I think part of the ignorance about deacons is, so the Roman Catholic tradition had only transitional deacons for a very, very long time.
Yes.
And when the order of deacons was restored as a full order, permanent order, it was very uneven. In some places, those men who were being trained were trained very well. My understanding is in other places, it was spotty. It was mm-hmm. spotty. So there's an uneven implementation. And I think because of that, in some places, the diaconate got a little tarnished in its reputation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my experience today is the deacons that I meet, you know, Roman Catholic or Eastern Catholic, are very, very well trained.
Yes, I would totally, totally agree. Yeah. I think in earlier decades of the diaconate, they didn't know exactly what they were looking for among the Roman deacons.
Right.
So they were trying to figure out what should we train them to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets to another element of the diaconate. Besides this very important role in the liturgy, what else do deacons do as part of their diaconal ministry?
Yeah, so very often it's formulated like this. Deacons serve in the diaconate of the liturgy, diaconate of the word, and the diaconate of charity. Those three things, liturgy, word, and charity, oftentimes summarize the bulk of a deacon's duties. So we already talked about liturgy. If you look in the New Testament, when there are images of heaven presented, heaven is shown as having an eternal liturgy taking place. That's what's going on.
Yeah, and this is much more prominent in mm-hmm. the East.
The Eastern churches really push this.
That the liturgy is a foretaste of heaven.
Yes.
Even the way icons are, the icons are windows into the saints in heaven.
Yes.
And that the liturgy is not our self-expression. Mm-hmm. It's rather about the imitation of the heavenly liturgy.
Yes.
Just as in the Old Testament. The Old Testament liturgy was meant to be a replica. The
yep.
temple was a replica mm-hmm. of heaven, and the liturgy was a replica of heaven.
And that's why in the Eastern churches, it seems very unusual to people, because we're trying to replicate the experience of being in heaven. It's meant to feel otherworldly, different, foreign.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But if you look at a lot of the older icons of the heavenly liturgy taking place, it's very common in those old icons to see the angels vested as deacons.
Yes.
That's a very common sight.
Very much so.
And, you know, we talked about the word for deacon meaning envoy, ambassador, messenger. That's what an angel is, an ambassador or a messenger from God.
Exactly. So, that's what the word in Greek, angelos, means messenger.
Messenger.
And angelein means to send a message.
Yes. And then, of course, the diaconate of the word. That involves, of course, preaching, but also deacons are the ones who are meant to preach, to read the gospel if you have a deacon present. So during the liturgy, the deacon would be the one who would read from the gospel book. Now, a lot of parishes don't have deacons, so that doesn't happen. But when there's a deacon, the deacon's the one who does that.
Yes.
And part of that goes back to the early church, when the Christianity was being persecuted by the Romans. The books of the gospel were very, very priceless. And the Romans would hunt for copies of the gospel to destroy.
Yes.
The deacons were the ones who were given the task of protecting the gospels. They were the ones who'd hide the gospels. It was a very dangerous thing. Many deacons died because they refused to turn the gospels over to the Romans.
Yes.
So there's that connection that's still there. And then finally, the diaconate of charity, you know, service to those in need. And that's where we come back to the waiting at tables, looking out for the needs of the community. And historically, that meant that whatever was needed to help the people of the community, the deacon would do on behalf of the bishop.
You know, this is something that we can't imagine because we take the printing press for granted.
Mm-hmm.
And having hundreds and hundreds of millions of copies of the Bible available in very inexpensive as well as very beautiful forms. But a copy of a whole Bible could cost the equivalent of about $200,000.
Wow, wow.
Because they wrote them on vellum, mm-hmm. which is sheepskin. So you had to get sheepskins for each page.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was a lot of sheep. And the processing, and then supporting a copyist, you know, that all of that was extraordinarily expensive.
Yeah.
And the deacons would, you know, be there to protect. I've even heard that some of them would carry daggers to make sure they protected the gospel.
You've got to do what you got to do, right?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, this is... what are these, mafia hit deacons? No, we don't go there. But it's they would, and they would protect it with their lives, as you mentioned, many martyrs.
Yeah.
And also, you know, when a deacon or a priest betrayed the faith and gave the book, that was automatic excommunication.
Yeah, very serious.
Yeah, extremely serious. So that's part of the role. What are some of the other aspects of the roles of deacons in the church?
Well, you know, historically, very often deacons did act as ambassadors or envoys on behalf of bishops.
Right.
So back in the days of the Byzantine Empire in Constantinople, there were always ambassadors there from the Pope in Rome.
Right.
And the ambassadors of the Pope were almost always deacons who were stationed there in Constantinople.
St. Gregory the Great was one of them.
Exactly.
He, as a deacon, he was sent by the Pope to Constantinople to be the papal legate, the ambassador.
Yes. And at ecumenical councils, sometimes deacons would be there on behalf of bishops. Like St. Athanasius was there as a deacon at Nicaea. And then even as late as the Council of Trent in the West, one of the three presidents of the Council of Trent was actually a deacon who was sent by his bishop, and he was one of the people running the council.
And one of the things that you don't realize until you study the history of the papacy, a number, not only St. Gregory the Great, but a number of other popes had been deacons. They weren't priests or bishops waiting around to get elected, but they were often, very often, deacons.
Yes.
The archdeacon. Which means what? What is an archdeacon?
Well, back in the earlier time, the archdeacon was like the favored deacon who would assist the bishop the most closely. Mm-hmm. Today, the archdeacon typically is the deacon at the cathedral.
Mm-hmm.
And very often, the archdeacon is given a special title or a special vestment item to wear.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the bishop, it's the deacon who's closest to the bishop. These days, geographically, but back in the olden days, very often the archdeacon would be the successor who would become bishop after the current bishop.
Yeah, not necessarily one of the priests.
No.
You know, that boggles a lot of Western minds, or modern minds, because it was true in the West as it was in the East, that the deacons would be successors. And I think there's, you know, some of the other roles that deacons now have, because, like you, many of them are married.
Mm-hmm.
They also have a special ministry of the word in preparing couples for matrimony because they come from another experience than we priests can have. Mm-hmm. We celibate priests.
Yeah.
You add a lot to the experience of marriage when you do the deacon preparation.
Yeah. Now, and in our tradition, our priests are oftentimes married, so typically they bring that experience themselves.
Sure. And this is something used, especially in a time when, you know, we don't always have great models for marriage.
Right.
And to have folks within the church, clergy, in the case of the deacons, and in your churches, the sometimes the priest, mm-hmm. this can bring awareness of the difficulties as well as the benefits.
It can, big time.
Yeah. Though I've had a number of couples say to me, how do you know all this stuff? You know, when I do marriage prep, mm-hmm. I said, it's easy. You married people tell me everything.
Yeah, that's very true. And plus, you grew up in a family, you know, you know the dynamics.
Yeah. And you just watch a lot.
Yeah.
Well, look, we have to take a little bit of a break. We're going to come back in a couple minutes and get some of your questions and comments. So please stay with us. Right. Welcome back. We are speaking with Ukrainian Greek Catholic Deacon, Father Deacon Anthony Dragani. And are you ready for some questions?
Sure. Why not?
Let's start off with Steve, who is in the great state of Oregon. Steve, what can we do for you this evening?
The question is, I want to know, how come women cannot be ordained as deacons?
Yeah. How come?
Well, that's an interesting question, because in the early church, there were deaconesses.
Yes.
They were a thing, and both in the West and the East. Now, were they the same as male deacons? They were their own order, and they functioned a bit differently. Mm-hmm. So typically, the female deacons, the deaconesses, in the West, their primary function was to assist with the baptizing of women, because back then, adult women were often baptized in the nude.
Yes.
And you needed somebody to help with that. But they also would see
they would hold up large blankets mm-hmm. so that people would not be looking improperly at the women going into the baptistry.
Mm-hmm. And they also had a role ministering to the women of the community.
Yes.
Now, in the West, it appears that the order of deaconesses died out fairly early. But in the East, it continued for many centuries. Mm-hmm. So they were a thing in the East, and actually in some of the Eastern Orthodox churches today, you still have deaconesses in convents. They do certain roles there in convents that are primarily off limits to men. But are they or were they the same thing as male deacons? That's the question the church still hasn't definitively answered. Now, some would say that it was a totally separate thing altogether. Mm-hmm. They have a name in common and nothing else. But the church has not definitively spoken on that just yet.
The one thing we do see, Steve, is that in the Apostolic Constitution, which is a document from the early 3rd century, so the early 200s, and it's a description of how liturgies were done.
Yeah.
And when they talk about the deaconesses, they say twice in the document that they are appointed, not ordained. So they make a very clear distinction about that. The deacons and the presbyters and the bishops are ordained, but they were not ordained deaconesses.
If I recall correctly, the Council of Nicaea says the same thing in one of its canons as well.
Yes, so that this was brought up at a council, and they made the same clarification, which was about 100 years after that. Mm-hmm. It was still the norm.
Right.
And I think, you know, if I may, mm-hmm. just, you know, Steve, to point out that the three orders of priesthood are the bishop, the priest or presbyter, and the deacon. The word priest comes from the German Priester, which is the German pronunciation of presbyter. That's mm-hmm. where that word comes. So that's the same. And the key of it is that sacramentally and symbolically, you know, when you're dealing with sacraments, you're talking about outward signs instituted by Christ to communicate grace. Mm-hmm. That's what, you know, the classic definition of a sacrament, outward sign instituted by Christ to communicate grace. The sign of priesthood is the male because he represents Christ sacramentally. And the feminine represents the church. That's why nuns typically wear a wedding ring. They are brides of Christ, and they symbolize the church. Well, the priests symbolize Christ in his ministry. Now, does that mean that women can't be images of Christ? No. That's not what that means. But there's a sacramental sign that males fulfill in being that sign of Christ that would make the relationship between the priest and the congregation, where the priest is standing in the person of Christ. That's a key element of the priesthood. And when you take a look at the Vatican documents, you see that the priest acting in persona Christi, in the person of Christ, is not only found in St. Paul in 2 Corinthians, and where he says he was acting in to prosopo Christou, in the person of Christ, but also it is something that the Vatican Council mentions six times, and that's why the priest does not say this is his body. Mm-hmm. We don't say Jesus baptizes you. Yeah. Or Jesus forgives your sins. No. We priests say in the person of Christ that we act in his person by saying, I baptize you in the name of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit. This is my body. This is the cup of my blood. Because we're as Archbishop Sheen used to say, he looks at the priest through Jesus-colored glasses. Mm-hmm. And sees him acting ministerially. The deacons also share in that major order. Right. And for that reason, the deacons are ordained to the diaconate.
Yeah.
Women have another role. It's just, I remember, you're too young, but I remember goofiness well before you were born, where people were talking about consecrating beer and pretzels at Mass.
What?
Yes. Or cookies and milk for children's Masses. Because those are the things that children normally eat cookies and milk.
Oh my gosh.
I know. There was even a preface. And you said, no, you cannot, that is not the Eucharist.
No.
Say the words of Jesus over a cookie, it remains a cookie. That's all it's going to be. Mm-hmm. And the same with the milk. You can say the words of Jesus, the Holy Spirit is not going to transform that. Mm-hmm. There's a symbol, a sign that goes back to Melchizedek with bread and wine.
Yeah.
Same with the priesthood being the sign of Christ. Include in his masculinity. He took flesh, he was incarnate, not as a general human being, but he became a man when he became man. And that's what we symbolize.
Yeah, it's for that reason, it's very possible, if not likely, that the order of deaconesses had the same name in common with the male deacons, but was something different altogether.
Well, what do they call your wife?
That's interesting, because in the Eastern churches, deacons' wives and priests' wives typically have titles. So in my tradition, the Ukrainian Greek Catholic tradition, a deacon's wife could be called, for example, Pani, or...
Which is Mrs.
Yeah.
Lady. Mm-hmm. Lady.
Or diaconissa. Diaconissa, which, you know, is deacon, the female version of deacon, but a deacon's wife is a diaconissa.
A deaconess.
Yeah, and my wife, by the way, her name was Vanessa, so she's Diaconessa Vanessa. It was meant to be.
Poetry.
Yeah. 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 But this question of women being ordained as deacons, interestingly enough, was one of the topics discussed at the Synod on Synodality last October.
Yes, right.
But weirdly enough, deacons were completely excluded from the synod. Deacons were not invited. We were not able to participate in any way.
Yeah, that would have been good to have them there and talk about that.
And that's a very strange omission when you consider that Ignatius said the deacons are one of the constituting elements of the church.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. We have a question from our studio audience. Father Deacon.
Hello, Father Mitch. Father Deacon Anthony.
You are a Father Deacon in which church?
St. George Melkite Catholic Church here in Birmingham, Alabama, and I'm also blessed here to work at EWTN. So
yes, yes. So, Father Deacon, what's your question?
Well, Father Deacon Anthony, as you know, at Vatican II, the Vatican II documents reestablished the diaconate as a permanent order in the hierarchy of the Church. Mm-hmm. And our situation here in the United States is kind of a mixed bag. We have some dioceses and archdioceses that have done a very good job in reintroducing the diaconate as a permanent order in the hierarchy. And yet at the same time, we have some very good Orthodox Roman Catholic dioceses that still don't have a deacon formation program. So if you had to pick one or two ways in which we as a universal church could re-implement the diaconate in the fullness that Vatican II asked for, what would those ways be?
So I think the reason why some dioceses resist the idea of deacons goes back to that misunderstanding I talked about earlier, the linguistic one. Mm-hmm. If they understand the diaconate to be simply service to those in need, if that's the only understanding of the diaconate, well, that's essentially a social worker. And lay people can do that just as effectively as anyone else. Why do you need an order whose only purpose is to do social work? Mm-hmm. So I think that misunderstanding has caused the diaconate to be seen as very optional rather than foundational. So I think the first thing that needs to happen is to overcome that misunderstanding. Mm-hmm. It's not just about service to those in need. That's an important thing, and many deacons do that ministry, but that's not all that it's about. It's about more than that. So that understanding, I think, is fundamental. But beyond that, I think it's useful for programs to be established that have kind of standards, right? Standards that are across the board. And I believe that exists now. Mm-hmm. For a long time, it didn't. But I believe right now there are standards, at least nationwide, that do present the proper course of formation to make sure we don't end up with deacons who are not properly trained.
And it's very important that the wives are totally on board.
Yes.
And in the Roman Church, the deacon candidates' wives typically study also. They meet together with the other deacon candidates' wives, and many of them, they take the same classes. Now, I don't know that that's always the case, but in many dioceses, they take the same courses so that they are part of the formation and they understand what their husband is getting into.
On one hand, I can see the benefit of that. On the other hand, though, that puts a real burden on the wife and on the family, especially if they have kids.
Exactly.
And I think that probably excludes a lot of potential deacons.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, no, that really does make for a problem when they are, you know, having still young children.
Right. Ultimately, it's the husband who's the ordained minister, so I don't know why the wife would have to have the same theological understanding.
Just to keep an eye on him.
Okay. Give him a line.
Just kidding. All right, we have another caller. Laura, what can we do for you?
Hi, Father Mitch, and hi, Father Deacon Anthony. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
So you had used a term subdeacon. I have two questions. subdeacon, and I've not heard that one before. And then also, your title, Father Deacon Anthony, is Father Deacon, and that's an interesting title. So
yes.
Could you expound on those a little, please?
Thank you, Laura. Great questions. Yeah. First of all, the title Father Deacon, let's deal with that.
Yeah, so in the West, the title Father has become very much linked to the priesthood.
Mm-hmm.
But in the Eastern tradition, that's not necessarily the case. Monks who are of a certain rank are referred to as Father, even if they're not ordained. Mm-hmm. There are a number of men who are never ordained who are monks referred to as Father because they're spiritual fathers.
Exactly.
The key thing is spiritual fatherhood. Mm-hmm. So deacons are also seen as spiritual fathers. So in the East, it's not at all uncommon to refer to deacons as Father or Father Deacon, which is a way of distinguishing them from priests.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea of Father being only limited to the priesthood is actually a Western thing that really is not found in the East.
Right. And one of my Franciscan friends said that that especially came with the Franciscans. That, you know, people, you know, there was a close relationship with them. I don't know of any documentary background for that, but he said that the Franciscans were the ones that were called Father on a regular basis.
Well, that's interesting because if you read the earliest biographies of St. Francis, he was referred to as Father Francis.
Exactly.
But he was actually a deacon, not a priest.
That's right. Exactly. He didn't get ordained to the priesthood,
no.
But he was ordained a deacon.
Yes.
Now, in terms of subdiaconate, what's mm-hmm. going on? What is that?
So a subdeacon, it's the minor order before deacon. And this is usually somebody who serves at the altar and assists the priest and assists the deacon.
Mm-hmm.
They're also there on behalf of the bishop. But there used to be subdeacons in the West as well.
That's right.
There were minor orders, and we still have them in the East, but the West phased out the minor orders after Vatican II.
Yeah, they have what they call the ministry of acolyte
mm-hmm.
and lector. And that, so for instance, that those are still minor orders
mm-hmm.
that typically when our novices get their vows and they go on to start studying philosophy, they will be instituted, not ordained, but instituted to the order of lector, which means they are the ordinary lector or reader at Mass for the epistle, the Old Testament reading, and the psalm.
Whereas subdeacons are actually ordained.
And subdeacons are ordained. And in, you were ordained as subdeacon.
Yes.
I know in the Maronite Church, the subdeacon is also given roles of the minor orders that were suppressed in the West. Porter, he was the one to make sure that the doors were opened. And in the case of danger, shut. You know, if somebody tried to harm the church,
mm-hmm.
that they would lock the doors. And along with porter, they would also have exorcist. That was another minor order, and they include lector and acolyte. So the three minor orders included in the Maronite subdiaconate would be lector and acolyte and porter. So they can read the epistle, but they can't read the gospel.
Mm-hmm. In the Byzantine tradition, we never had the exorcist or porter order, if I'm correct. But today we definitely have, for example, you know, a reader or acolyte, subdeacon, or
mm-hmm.
oftentimes what's called candle bearer, which would be another term for the acolyte.
Mm-hmm.
But they actually are ordained with the laying on of hands. However, it's not the sacrament of holy orders.
Right, right. It's still not quite the same.
Yeah.
As it's only diaconate, priesthood, and bishop that are the major orders.
Yes.
This is minor. We have another caller. Hello, Tom?
Yes, Father Mitch.
Hi, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from South Florida.
Great, good to have you. And what's your question?
Yeah, I have a question for Father Deacon Dragani. Can you tell me what the responsibilities are or permissions that the deacons have with regards to the sacraments?
Do you mean in the Eastern Church?
Well, Eastern Church or in the Roman Church, or the Western Church, either one.
Yeah, because it varies a little bit. But
it does.
What are some of the roles that the deacon, sacramental roles the deacon can do in the Byzantine Church?
Well, it's different than in the Roman.
Yeah.
And here's why. In the Eastern tradition, typically the sacraments of baptism, confirmation, and communion are linked. They're usually given together at once.
So, and that's, again, something a lot of folks don't realize.
Right.
You know, in the Maronite tradition, we do baptism and chrismation, mm-hmm. which is confirmation.
Yes.
But not First Communion.
Mm.
In the Byzantine Church, it's baptism, chrismation, and First Holy Communion as an infant.
Yep, all at the same time.
Yes.
So for that reason, you don't have deacons performing baptisms typically in the East.
Because maybe they can't confirm.
They cannot confirm, right? So you always have a priest doing the baptism because they can confirm, unless there's an emergency situation, at which point anyone can do a baptism in an absolute emergency.
Yes, but not a confirmation.
Not a confirmation. Only priests and bishops can confirm.
Yes.
So for that reason, we don't have Eastern Catholic deacons performing baptisms, mm-hmm. whereas in the Roman tradition, deacons often do baptisms in large parishes. That's very common.
Very common.
Mm-hmm. But sacramentally, we cannot hear confessions. We cannot consecrate the Eucharist.
That's true in the Roman Church.
Yeah.
Can't ordain priests.
Nope. But in the Roman Church, deacons can give blessings and bless objects. In the Byzantine tradition, we do not.
And also in the Roman Church, a deacon can be the official at a wedding.
Right.
But in the Eastern Church,
no.
Byzantine deacons cannot celebrate the wedding.
And that's because in the Western tradition, the administrators of the sacrament of holy matrimony are the husband and wife.
Right.
The person who's there as the officiant is not actually the one administering it.
Right.
But in the Eastern tradition, what causes us to be married as husband and wife is when the priest places crowns on our heads.
Yes.
There's a crown placed on the head of the bride, a crown placed on the head of the groom by the priest. And those crowns are crowns of martyrdom. They're there to remind us that to be successful in marriage, you have to die to your own selfish desires. Mm-hmm. And they also show that the church, the smallest unit of the church is the family. It's the domestic church, so to speak. So the priest placing the crowns on your heads is what makes you married, and only a priest can do that. A deacon cannot.
Yes. So those would be some of the differences between the two.
Mm-hmm.
We have one more caller here. Betsy in New Jersey, what can we do for you in just the last minute?
Yes. Hello, Father Mitch Pacwa. I was just wondering if a Protestant minister were to come officially into the Catholic Church, would that Protestant minister, would he be able to be elevated to the role of deacon in the Western Church or in the Eastern Church?
Yes, he could certainly be ordained a deacon in the Eastern Church. And in the Roman Church, it's even possible for him to be ordained a priest,
mm-hmm.
not a bishop in Byzantine and the Roman Church. Only celibates can be bishops. A Protestant minister who converts to Catholicism can be ordained a priest. That was something instituted by Pius XII back around 1948 or 49.
Okay.
Yes, well, after the war, because so many Lutherans became Catholic.
And I know Protestant ministers who are deacons today.
Yes. So, I too. I'm afraid we are flat out of time. So thank you very much for being with us. And may the Lord bless you all and keep you and cause his face to shine upon you and lead you in all of your ways by his peace. Almighty God bless you, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Amen.
And we can bring you Father Deacon Dragani and all the other guests on this show and all the other programs only because this network is brought to you by you. We don't do advertising and sell that. We depend on the Lord inspiring you to help us. So please remember to keep us in between your gas bill, your electric bill, and your cable bill. And if you will do that, we'll be able to pay all of our bills too. God bless you all, and thank you.